But I'm more focused today about teaching others and just being able to come back tomorrow. You know, just being a little bit smarter about it and thinking more about the longevity game of it. But
yeah,
trying to keep your head on in the practice of law with the stress and everything we deal with, there's no doubt some kind of physical activity is instrumental. But even better, when you get to strangle a little 25-year-old, like, it's even better. It really does work out the
really
stress.
Really get that out.
Welcome to Above the Legal Limit. I'm your host, Justin Chopin, business owner, lawyer, dad, world's best husband, traveler, and adventure seeker. On this podcast, we mix business with pleasure. We'll dive into growth strategies, entrepreneurial adventures, the business of law, and prove that business isn't boring. So let's get ready because we are going above the legal limit.
Welcome to Above the Legal Limit. I have a special guest today, Stephen Hebert, who is your local criminal defense attorney in New Orleans. Stephen, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I gave you that little plug, right? Like, that's what everyone does right now. They're like, you're injury attorney, but you also do injury too. So you're a renaissance around here. We only do civil work. So anytime someone does criminal work, we get really excited because we don't actually know anything about criminal law.
Well, in all candor, I cherry pick the hell out. If I'm going to take a personal injury, it better be great liability, a deep pocket to pay it, and that kind of thing. If there's any kind of warts on the case or any kind of resistance, I'm not going to take that.
Well, so. Fair enough. I mean, look, we can't take any criminal work because we don't know how to. We had one guy who's like former DA, but he refuses to do it. And so after that, I always tell people, listen, if you want to go to jail, you're looking for some time off. Yeah, I'm your guy. Come on in. If you're trying to not spend time in prison, you should probably find someone who understands this area of the law. We just did a whole, you missed it. You should have been here. We just did a whole podcast this morning on the JonBenet Ramsey. I don't even, what do you even call that? I don't, there's like a renaissance of the JonBenet Ramsey investigation and indictment. And I was getting peppered with all these questions, like actual criminal questions about the indictment and why they would do this indictment and then not the DA not accept the charges. And I'm like, man, you really, I will give you an answer, but you should understand that I'm probably 100% wrong in everything that I'm saying right now, that we're going like deep law school here.
How do you even remember that many details from it? That was, what, 30 years ago? Or?
That's what I said, but it's a thing now. And Netflix has a documentary on it, and the people in my office are religiously following it. They had crib notes. You saw those notes? They had like 50 pages of notes, which is why I was like, we need to do a show on this, because I walked back there, and they were all comparing notes. I said, what's going on? Like, I thought we were doing real legal work, and then they're talking about the indictment, and then they had like a very specific, like, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, Rule 56, as it related to the criminal case. And I said, well, I know that's impossible. So it was interesting stuff. But before we got started, you and I were talking about your extracurriculars, which I think is really important in the practice of law.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, if you do this long enough, especially what you do, but to what I do to a certain extent too, like, it could take everything out of you. So I run. That's what I do. I tried biking. You were biking. Are you still biking?
I am. I try to balance that with other activities, yeah. But
you're like hardcore biking. I couldn't do that.
It was during the pandemic when I first picked it up. As you know, my main hobby is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
But when the pandemic hit with a immunocompromised wife, I thought it might be a bad idea to go roll on the ground with other guys who use poor judgment. So from I thought it was best. It was time for me to learn a new hobby. And that's when I started cycling, I guess, May of 2020, because I'd just gotten that bored.
Yeah.
Went out and bought a giant TCR and just started riding around town. And like most things, kind of dug into it until I hit some kind of level of mastery with it.
Yeah, you really did. And like you've done a great job with it. So I'm not going to call mine cycling. Mine's you can't call it cycling until you've done something you're really spectacular. Mine is just biking, bicycling. And like, but I have like a workout bike. I don't have like a road bike or anything like that. And the thought process was, you don't get to have a road bike until it makes sense to have a road bike. Like, I had to work my way there, thus I never got one. But I started because I wanted to do a triathlon. Mm-hmm. And so I got a bike, and it's all right. You know, it's what's that? I don't know what kind of brand it is. Trek? Maybe it's a Trek. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's like you can buy those. Yeah. Locally. Right. And I liked it, But I really peaked. Like I was never, I didn't peak. I was never able to get to that next level, like where I was really topping out at like 15 miles an hour. I was never able to kind of get to that next stage. And then I started just having the same cycle of injuries that I had from running. And everyone's like, well, you should bike because it's better for your back. And then one day I was like, so I ran for years. I had back problems. I injured my back training for a mountain climb back in 2018. And everyone said, don't run because it's bad for your back. So I started biking and then my back hurt. And then I was like, well, I'm going to take a break. And then when I took a break, then my back really hurt because I wasn't doing anything. And so eventually one day I was like, well, this is stupid. If my back is going to hurt while I'm not running, I just assume start running again and just do what I like to do. Mm-hmm. And so the bike is collecting dust next to my kids' bikes. I haven't quit per se. I just haven't done it mm-hmm. in a few years. But you were like doing like real like road, you know, with a road bike, you're going 20 some odd miles an hour. So I think that's really cool. Like I wanted to get there one of these days, maybe when I'm older, you know.
It's not that bad. I mean, you just got to work at it, you know?
Yeah.
It's all about consistency more than anything else.
So in the end, what I found happened is it's hugely time consuming in a way that maybe running is not for me, you know? So I can go, right? So I can go for like a 5 mile run and that's enough for me. And I don't really need to do too much more than that. But if, you know, for the same workout on the bike, like I was going to be gone for 2 hours.
Correct.
And then my wife is all pissed off because I'm gone for 2 hours. And we have two kids and she's a lawyer too. And so I was like, you know, I'll just go for a 3 mile run. It's no big deal. I don't want any trouble.
Yeah.
You know? So the jiu-jitsu, is that, I don't say it right. Is that, do you find that kind of helps you with the practice of law to kind of like give you, it's not just like a social outlet, but like a physical outlet too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the other thing, too, you may have forgotten this about me. I actually boxed from 93 to 99, and I had my last boxing match right before I started law school in September of 1999. It was kind of funny because someone tried to talk to me about that the other day, and, you know, it's like, guys, this is over 25 years ago at this point. I feel like Uncle Rico talking about my boxing days, you know, kind of thing. But in any event, when I was 41, you know, when you get over 40s, that's when the metabolism starts to crash.
For sure.
And I'm looking for some kind of way to get back active. It's when I first got my practice established and felt like, okay, I don't have to be in the office all the time. Maybe I can sneak away for lunch, you know, work off a little stress. I got into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And the difference between, you know, with boxing, you can't take that many blows to the head. Causes brain damage. So I quit exactly at the right time.
Just at the right time.
I did. Yeah. But with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's all grappling, strangling, chokeholds, joint locks. So you're not getting the same blows to the head type of thing. And, you know, it's funny. I never thought I'd return to combat sports. I never thought I would get that. I thought my last fight was 1999. Well, like, hey, Steven, there's a competition next month. You want to go do it? Sure, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Show up, I weigh in, you know, roughly somewhere between 155 and 160. And there are not many 40-year-old guys that weigh 155 to 160. They're all like 250.
Yeah, they're big guys.
So they're like, well, there's a 41-year-old guy over there that weighs 250 pounds. But there's only one of those guys. However, we got a bunch of 18 to 29-year-olds over there that weigh the same thing as you. What do you want to do? I figured, well, hell, I just paid $100 and I want to wrestle. I want my wrestling's worth. So I went over the with the adults. I mean,
that makes
the
sense.
Little young kids. They're all laughing at me until I strangled all their little asses and beat all of them. So, you know, it was like I was playing with house money.
Yeah.
You know, being able to go back to something like that I used to do in my 20s that I never thought I'd be able to do. And I competed at just about every belt level through purple belt. And I think at that point, it got to the level of where everybody else didn't have a real job. Everybody else was doing it for a living. Everybody else was taking steroids.
I
was still beating them,
yeah.
But this wasn't fun anymore.
Right.
And the joy had been sucked out of it at that point. And so now I think I focus more on teaching and as to training. And not that I'm now almost 52 years old. Received my black belt over the summer, which is actually an extremely difficult thing to do in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But I'm more focused today about teaching others and just being able to come back tomorrow, you know, just being a little bit smarter about it and thinking more about the longevity game of it. But
yeah,
trying to keep your head on in the practice of law with the stress and everything we deal with, there's no doubt some kind of physical activity is instrumental. But even better, when you get to strangle a little 25-year-old, like, it's even better. It really does work out the
really
stress.
Really get that out. I hear you. It's very stressful. I find running is my opportunity to kind of get away from the practice to think about the business. You know, that's usually what I'm thinking about, or other stuff too, family and things like that. But you know, you'll have, it's uninterrupted. Though I run with a watch now, so it's not that uninterrupted. The guys are like texting, and every five steps, you know, Siri is like talking to me through my headphones. It's very annoying. I need to put it on like airplane mode, but I always forget to do it. But yoga is another thing that I picked up after I hurt my back, and it is low impact. You're not beating up anybody. But I would imagine you're working like a lot of core, a lot of like stabilizer muscles. You're working a lot of balance and things like that. And then it really is uninterrupted. And that was hugely beneficial for my back. And even still, you know, I'll kind of like, you know, try to do it at least once a week just to kind of open the back up and kind of, you know, get all your muscles and joints and stuff like that. As I get older, it's really helpful for me. But I'm with you too. You know, I used to run a lot of races, and I really don't do that anymore. I'm actually kind of more in the mindset now of like, I'm just glad to be out here. I'm just glad to get some fresh air. You know, I want to do it. You know, and I still think like maybe, you know, every now and then I'll have like wild hair and I'm like, I should run a marathon. And then, you know, but my kids are like 7 and 8, right? So I'm like really in the thick of it. And I come back down to earth and I'm like, you know, Justin, why don't you just relax, actually. Just take a minute and not sweat. Or you could sweat, but don't worry about the next race.
Well, the other thing too, it really does help, particularly, you know, as criminal guys, we live in court. We're bouncing from courtroom to courtroom.
Yeah.
We're not in the office.
Right.
And we try tons of cases.
Yes.
And, you know, for example, my first sparring partner in West Monroe, Louisiana, when I first started boxing, was a world champion flyweight named Richard Savage. You didn't even see his punches. You just saw a blur, and you felt a sting at the end of your nose. You know, and when they first put me in there, they're like, you know, we're going to put you in with a world champion, and when, not if, but when he starts whipping your ass too bad, we'll pull him off of you. Okay?
Thanks.
And that's what they're told. I was like, okay.
All right.
And, you know, I got in there, and, you know, I would see the blur and feel the sting, and I'd get mad. And when I would get mad, I would immediately swing wild and miss. And every time I swung wild and missed, he would pop me even harder. And it would escalate, me swinging, me getting madder and all this, until finally I'd wake up on my butt, okay? And it wasn't until I really learned the skill. And it's a very difficult skill to develop. But to be in a situation like that where you're literally trying to kill someone or knock them unconscious or strangle them or whatever, but still keep a calm mindset through all of that. And it's something that I find really helps me, whether I'm doing a motion hearing, court appearance, jury trial, or whatever, just being able to have that kind of same mentality that I'm here to kill someone, but I've got to stay calm.
But you got to be calm.
You have to be calm, and you have to have clarity, and you have to be paying attention to exactly what's going on. And, you know, that helped me. Learning that skill in boxing helped me later on in life, helped me practicing law, but it's kind of that return to that same thing in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's very complicated. It's very strategic. It's very much of like countering, using the other person's aggression against them type of thing.
Yeah,
and
if you get
kind
mad,
of flies over.
If you get mad in the practice,
you're unhinged. You're tilt.
You're gonna lose.
Walk right into right. something
you're
just completely
into a trap. You're not thinking. You're not two steps ahead. You're in the moment. You know. You're too focused on your feelings and what you want to be at, what you want happening versus how to get there. Which is not an easy thing. You can't teach it.
Yeah.
Really, you really can't. You have to. It's like a self-discovery kind of thing. And some people just never get there. You know, it's a hard thing to master, I would think.
You know, I mean, look, that's usually the most beautiful thing about trial. It's usually something so simple.
Yeah.
Something comes out of somewhere that is such just a gift that someone gets to you. And most lawyers are not paying attention and see that gift coming out. They're too busy. Look at the drafted question or what's the next question they're going to ask while the witness is just giving
them all the answers.
Exactly what you want. But yeah. If you're not paying attention, it'll just go right by you and you'll miss it.
So what most of your practice right now, I know, is criminal, but like what kind of crimes are you working on?
Predominantly most of my work is far more state than federal. I do some work for the panel with the federal, and that tends to be most of my federal work anyway. It's kind of interesting because I think as NOPD manpower numbers have dwindled, they have stopped arresting our beloved drunk, stupid tourist. Because most of those cases used to be very easily to handle. And it's typical that people come visit our town, they have a few too many and do something that they wouldn't normally otherwise do.
Right.
But as NOPD numbers have gone down, they simply don't have the manpower to do those types of things. They really have kind of had to refocus on the real violent crime. Now, I think in some ways that's very good for the city. It's not so good for my practice.
Yeah,
just because it was very easy work and very, very good work to have. But I do think that's kind of, we don't see near as much of that as far as criminal defense lawyers, people who are just visiting the city, getting arrested for that kind of thing. But I think I'm probably more so in the parishes around New Orleans more than actual Orleans Parish. But that's probably the bulk of my work.
Have you seen a change in, because I know when we had the new DA, he was talking about not prosecuting low-level drug crime. What I'll call low-level, that's how you know I don't do criminal work. Simple possession. And are you seeing that? No,
they haven't done that. I do think a lot of people that voted for Mr. Williams are very upset with him because certainly he has kind of completely changed where he was. And he is probably pretty close to what Kiva Landrum Johnson said she was going to do to begin with. But there has been, the pendulum definitely has done some sharp swings within the past 7 years. We've seen it go left, right, left, and then back right.
What do you think's behind all that?
Well, we've had a huge crime wave.
Yeah. Scary crime wave.
And this is the thing, too. As much as everyone loves to take credit or lay blame at someone's feet, I don't think we ever really know what causes it. We had our politicians pass some stuff right when Jeff Landry took office, but I think it was really kind of like beating up on people who really can't punch back.
Yeah.
We actually had the lower spike than everybody else. Really around the states surrounding us were much, much worse.
Okay.
And they were trying to blame it on the criminal justice reforms of 2017. I don't think it was that at all. Like I said, it was all the other states were having a much more difficult time than we were. It was pretty much a nationwide thing. And not only that, the crime really went down before they made those changes. But he's going to pass these laws and take all the credit for it and try to make it sound like something changed. It was really interesting because we had the justice reforms that seemed – in 2017, they really seemed like they were common sense. I think it was kind of the right approach. And then I think in 2020, we might have gone a little too far left. I think we might have been like, let everybody out of jail. Let everybody out of jail. And then we had someone get carjacked at Costco. And then we're like, lock everybody up.
Sorry.
And we're
false alarm.
We're kind of at lock everybody up right now.
You know what I would appreciate if a politician would ever say, guys, I have no idea. We tried that. I thought that might work. It seems like that idea was terrible. Now we're going to go this way. Just giving everybody a heads up. I mean, cause that's, you know, a lot of times there is no way to know, right? I mean, how do you stop violent crimes from a 17-year-old, right? It's like, that's a very challenging, they're not even 17. 14, 15. Like, how do you stop that at its root cause? Well, it would require systemic changes, right? The whole system, right? The education system, the family system, you know, the government,
Those are much more religion. Social problems.
Right? You're not going to solve it with policy on crime prevention.
I think by the time they get into a court, it's too late.
Yeah.
I think it's probably much more of a societal problem. When you're talking about education, you're talking about, economies. and that type of thing. And it's very interesting too, because it's interesting what certain political parties can push certain things for certain reasons. For example, Jeff Landry loved to call the reforms we did in 2017 hug-a-thug, okay? And he tried to make it sound like it was all the liberals. All we did really was copy what the conservatives did in Texas, okay? It was the conservatives in Texas that started the whole thing under Rick Perry, because they looked at their corrections budget and they're like, you know what? We spend way too much money on our prisons.
Right.
So let's be fiscally responsible and close our prisons. And they're the ones that did, they, and you know what? They made these changes. They cut their prison population in half. They closed their prisons and they saved millions, and it worked. Now, the problem was all the other southern states said, well, if the conservatives can do that, no one's calling Texas soft on crime, we can certainly do that. And so then all the southeast followed. The problem with all the other states in the southeast probably had, where they didn't have the same results, is not everyone else has Texas schools or economy.
Yeah.
So I think even though we passed a watered-down version of what Texas did, I don't think it was going to be near as successful as Texas, because Texas has those other things. And I think that really those base societal things that cause crime, you know, lack of education, lack of economy.
Yeah, which we have a real problem with in this city. I'm always interested in this new legislation that it decriminalized concealed weapons. And I always have to think, so who is that for? I view the concealed weapons charge as like a Trump charge. It's like your conduit to get some criminals on other charges, right? So you didn't arrest them because they had a concealed weapon. You arrested them because you thought they committed this crime, and they also had a concealed weapon. So you can use the concealed weapons charge to hold them and as leverage.
Well, that's really the greatest example of, boy, there really are three states called Louisiana, huh? North Louisiana, South Louisiana, and New Orleans.
Yeah, right.
Because that law has this different application. And I think it's the rest of the state doesn't think about guns the same way New Orleans does.
The way we do, right?
And culturally, it's just such a different thing.
I know plenty of people with a concealed weapons permit. Well, they all had the permit anyways.
And
you don't really have to worry about them.
We go all the way back when they insisted on putting into our state constitution that we all have the fundamental right to tote guns. Well, I've seen a rash of cases in New Orleans, okay, because we have a lot of people coming visiting. They feel threatened. They pull out their guns. They shoot at each other. They hit everyone else around them but them, okay?
Right.
But the real thing I've seen lately is people who are just armed with a weapon, okay? And they're not really pointing it at anybody, but they're armed. And the other party suddenly feels like, well, they paid me in reasonable apprehension of being shot, so you should arrest them for aggravated assault with a firearm. Okay? Where's the level? If you have a fundamental constitutional right to bear arms, at what point do I really place you in reasonable apprehension of receiving a battery?
Right. If you have your constitutional right to do so.
If it's on my hip and I put my hand on it, is that really, does that mean suddenly I've committed the felony offense? And I actually had a few cases that, I've had to successfully defend. I've had a guy that was leaving work where he worked as a security guard. He got in a wreck in the lower ninth ward. Some nice people were just trying to check on his well-being. They were really just trying to be nice. And he freaked out, thought he was being robbed, screamed at the guy to get on the ground. The guy got on the ground, and then he realized he wasn't a threat. And he's like, oh, man, get up. But they wanted to say that was aggravated assault with a firearm because he had a firearm on his side, and he kind of motioned his hand to that. Frankly, I didn't think that was a criminal violation.
No.
I mean, you can't fix all problems in society with the criminal code. Sometimes you're just an asshole.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. We talk about that a lot, right?
I mean, I could wake up every day to be with the goal of being the biggest asshole possible without breaking any laws. That's possible, you know? But, yeah.
I follow the Johnny Cash philosophy of don't take your guns to town. You know, I have guns, right? You know, but I don't have them on me. It's a personal choice.
Well, you
not to say anything about anyone who does or doesn't. I don't really care. I don't, because I don't want to be in that situation.
Well, you grew up here, though. I grew up in Monroe, Louisiana, where we spend every moment shooting something, chasing something out in the woods.
Squirrel hunts.
And, you know, so I certainly understand how other people in the state might feel about it. I've also was a prosecutor before I became a defense attorney. I've seen all these shootings. I certainly understand New Orleans has culturally a much different feeling about guns. And unfortunately, New Orleans doesn't have all the votes in the state legislature.
Right. Well, the people in New Orleans are scared to death.
Yeah.
And the rest of the state has no need to be. Well,
then, this is the other thing, too, about guns. Okay, all those good old boys I grew up with in Monroe, they grow up and they're socialized with guns.
Yeah.
From the moment they're 3 or 4 years old, their father is teaching them to never point that at somebody. Always treat it like it's loaded. Don't shoot, point your thing unless you're going to shoot something. People in New Orleans don't get that socialization. So the idea of all these New Orleans people going out to buy guns to be for self-protection, that scares the hell out of me because that means they don't know what the hell they're doing, and they're going to end up shooting themselves or somebody that they love.
Right.
And the other thing, too, that I think is really flooding our streets with guns is people being irresponsible, sticking it in their car. A car is not a secure thing.
No.
And thinking, I'm going to keep it in my car as, you know, self-protection. I think there are probably more guns in the streets in New Orleans just because of those idiots doing that.
So I was talking to my banker, and he was saying that his neighbor told him, so here you go, so my banker's telling me his neighbor, his car had been broken into, we live in Lakeview, but his car had been broken into something like 6 or 7 times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, that stinks. And then, but then the statement is, and they got my gun every time.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wait, what?
Yeah.
You're responsible for 6 or 7 guns on the street because you keep leaving it in your car?
Seriously.
Just put it on your belt.
And
bring it home or don't leave it in your car. What is wrong with you?
And I bet any kid who's out looking for a gun, the first place they're going to go for is the white Ford pickup.
Yeah, white Ford pickup. Exactly.
Probably gun in there. Let's go bash the window.
So we talk about this, whether we even want to lock the doors or not. Sometimes I don't even bother. You know, I it would be easier for me for you to steal the car than it would be for you bashing the windows and have for me to get that fixed. I would just do me a favor. If you're going to steal my car, don't let me find it, you know, a week later, you know, in a ditch somewhere. Just make sure it never comes back. Send it down to Mexico or something, but just don't make it my problem after that.
My wife's Volvo got stolen. We actually got the insurance settlement, I think, like just a couple of weeks before they found it, thank God. So, but that was when Luke was first born, and that was when we were both at Kilo Blonde Blend together.
Yeah, the earliest. Stephen and I worked together in the very early days of both of our careers. But I think you had been at DA before you went over there.
I have.
Yeah, before. And then you went back. But we both started our careers in civil practice in the same place. We actually have a case right now. So I can't really talk too much about it because I think it's going to trial. But it at its core, it's a hurricane case. But our client's house was looted by like the whole neighborhood. They wiped her out. And, you know, the insurance company, they put a value on it, and then they go bankrupt. And then LIGA comes in, and LIGA's like, yeah, well, we don't think it was really worth all that. And I'm like, yeah, but the insurance company did. Like, they already established the value of this. And they're like, yeah, we don't really care. But, there's LIGA for you. So some of the items get recovered, and they were in the evidence room, you know, for quite a while. And one of their big defenses was like, well, look, it was in the evidence room here. You can have it back. And I was like, wait a second. Isn't this the same evidence room where the rats were eating marijuana and they had all these high rats running around? What makes you think I want this back now? Gross.
Well, that was always confusing to me because I don't think the evidence room is actually at NOPD headquarters. I think the evidence room is actually on Earhart.
I don't know where it is. That makes sense. Yeah, on that building kind of by the, yeah.
But, they, you know, that building, it's right there over there by the corners. They got the, they bought that with Katrina money. Remember, there was all the evidence got washed out, and they built that new evidence establishment there. I really kind of wondered.
With the marijuana rats? You think maybe it wasn't marijuana. Maybe it was like, hey,
I was very confused. Don't get me wrong. NOPD headquarters is a dump,
right?
And it probably needs to be imploded. I don't blame her on that, but I don't know why there was marijuana in that building.
Well, I do know this. If I had a purse or some sort of personal item in an evidence room where there's known to be rats and drugs, I would not be eager for the return of that item. I would probably just assume rather be reimbursed for it and say, why don't you just auction it off you know, to somebody else who may want this rat, marijuana rat purse.
It's odd that I know this, but you know, if they don't, you have unclaimed property, I think they actually can auction off, but it goes for, those funds go to maintenance for the court.
Is that what they do?
Well, I think
they,
so.
They could probably, they've been begging for a new courthouse anyways.
Yep.
Sorry, well, here's what I want to know. Did you watch the boxing match?
Which one?
The boxing match. What? Mike Tyson.
I did not. That is not a boxing match.
Oh, okay. So this one. This so
did
is
not
it,
waste my time watching it.
Is it? Was it all? What do you think? You think it's all for show?
I do not understand this fascination people have of watching people box who suck at boxing.
Yeah. But George Foreman came back from retirement and he boxed and well, he was big. He was like old and big. Right?
George was still incredible though, and George knocked out Michael Moore and became world champion all over again. That's a different thing. I mean, Mike Tyson's over 50 years old. This whole Jake Paul thing of beating up people who don't really box, I don't understand that. It's something about MMA. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, MMA kind of encourages this whole jack of all trades, master of none. We don't really care. We're going to do things that we don't really know what we're doing or expert at.
Right.
And we're just going to watch because it's unpredictable and fun to watch.
It's a thing. It's a thing now. There's like a, it's a cultural thing with watching MMA. I don't watch it. It's very violent and I'm not a particularly violent person. And so while I don't judge anybody, it's just not for me.
Oddly enough, people think I'm crazy cause I don't like it, but you know, you watch a boxing match. I love watching boxing.
Sure. Okay?
And it seems to me that if you have more rules, it maybe gets more predictable. And there's actually beauty in learning how to perform within the rule set, okay? And boxing has certain rules. You can only punch with certain things. So you see guys actually having to work really hard to knock the other guy out.
Yeah.
In Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it's boring as hell to watch. Unless you actually do jiu-jitsu, you don't want to watch it. But still, if you're doing just jiu-jitsu, you'll see some brilliance in jiu-jitsu competitions because they're rule set and you have to operate within those rules to actually win or score points. MMA, there's hardly any rules.
There's no rules, so...
So it's almost not like, how do I figure out my rule set to get this person, you know, to win? MMA is more like, well, there's no rules. How in the hell did I keep getting from knocked out,
yeah.
you know, or getting killed here? And I just... It allows people never to get away with not having mastery in any particular discipline. And I don't enjoy that. I watch it, the boxing sucks. The jiu-jitsu, it sucks. But it doesn't have to be that good because there are no rules and they're so unpredictable. You're always one slap away. Some people enjoy that. I personally do not.
Fair enough. I'm with you. I don't love it. But I don't have as good of a reason. I just particularly don't want to watch it. You have a very calculated reason.
It's very easy. You like it or you like it or you don't.
Yeah.
But there has been this big thing. I don't understand this recent push. Like, let's do something that we absolutely don't know what we're doing, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah,
you know?
we're going to get there, and we're just going to beat each other into a bloody pulp in any which way we can.
Yeah.
You know, why not? I was like, nah, I actually was thinking we'd just go out for a couple of beers and, you know, maybe watch someone else do this. That sounds terrible. So, well, hey, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. For all of you alleged criminal offenders out there, allegedly.
The accused.
The accused, my daughter, my 8-year-old, has started picking up. Everything she says is allegedly. And it's only in context, like 50% of the time, which is even better. Where can they find you?
I have two different office locations. Given the explosion of state work I have in Jefferson Parish, I have an office in downtown Gretna. I also have an office just a few blocks from here at 700 Camp Street. However, as I mentioned before, I'm usually in a courtroom somewhere.
Right.
So don't come unless you have an appointment because I'm probably in the courtroom.
Probably gonna be in a courtroom.
Yeah. So generally speaking, I'm always available by phone, usually a text or a call away. But I can meet you at the office at any time by appointment, whether it's after hours or over the weekend.
That's it. Don't call me. Call Stephen Hebert. I'm just going to end up putting you in jail. You know, and we don't want that. So, well, hey, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's great catching up with you. Great seeing you again.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me today on Above the Legal Limit. If you enjoyed the show and you want to hear more about business and law, hit that subscribe button. If you didn't like the show, keep it to yourself. Remember, there's no limit to what we can achieve. We will see you next week. Until then, even though we're above the legal limit, let's drive safely. Cheers, everyone.